It's just past 8:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards Tiekert, and we're going to take the next 20 minutes to tell you the very incomplete story of Sinedu Okobi.
So my brother is the last of five. He's a connector, so he's the person in the family who was never fighting with anyone else.
This is his sister, Abella.
I guess you would call him just a gentle person. He was very non-judgmental. He asked tons of questions. So one thing from when he was little, he was someone who's always asking questions about facts or philosophy or religion. Just a kind person and a person who made friends wherever he went.
How did you find out what happened to him?
So I was in London and my mother called me to tell me, and she found out from the coroner.
The date was October 3rd. Abella knew her brother had some mental health problems that were mostly manageable. She knew he had been through a breakup earlier that year. It had seemed like he might be off his meds. And on this day, authorities said, he was in Millbrae. He was walking in traffic when sheriff's deputies showed up.
So one of the things that was very difficult is knowing that he was at the hospital by himself and that we didn't know. And we didn't know how long he had been at the hospital. Was he there for the full 6 hours? But other than that he died and other than that he was tased, we didn't have any other information.
Sinedu was tased multiple times. And in San Mateo County, he was the third person in a year to die after being tased.
Well, I immediately got on a plane and came back, went back to California. And there were a couple of things. So one, there's dealing with the immediate trauma of losing my little brother and the immediate trauma of taking care of my mother and talking to our other family members. And then there was just the larger narrative. So it wasn't as if he was in a car accident. It wasn't as if he's, succumbed from cancer. It's this. What I would call sort of an epidemic. It's this sort of America's scourge, the way in which he was killed. And so immediately connected it up to the fact that we're one of many families who have gone through this and wanted to really reach out, A, to other families, but also reach out to people who'd been working on this as an issue to tell our story and also to join our story to the many others. So one of the things we did is started a fundraiser, because a lot of people ask, what can I do? What can I give? And so we didn't want it to be about us. We wanted it to be about this as an issue. So started a fundraiser for Equal Justice Initiative, which is an organization that focuses on helping people who don't have access to legal help, on helping people navigate the criminal justice system and on racial justice in general. So we started a fundraiser for that.
Side note, Abella works for Facebook. She is the director of public policy for Africa. Her fundraiser for Equal Justice has already raised $70,000.
And then spent a lot of time trying to get attention on the story, because we didn't feel that we were getting answers in terms of what happened to my brother and my mother's son.
What are the answers you're missing now?
Well, I mean, I would say a couple things. So the first report, so when it first happened, the first report was that my brother had assaulted and attacked the police officers, and that was why they needed to use a taser. And it's actually quite characteristic. So whenever these stories come out, it's quite characteristic. The first thing that happens is that the victim is turned into a suspect, and the victim is essentially charged for their own murder. The narrative, so reporting that he's 6 feet, 6'3", that he's 330 pounds that he attacked, it very much aligns with this narrative of black people as huge or as frightening or beastly. And so he was taking on five police officers, and that did not align in any way with the person that we knew. So it's interesting that was the first statement, but in the most recent report, that came out yesterday, so I can't remember which newspaper, the district attorney was interviewed, and he said, well, no, actually, now what happened actually doesn't rise to the level of assault. But that narrative already happened. And so outstanding questions for me is, on what basis was my brother described as attacking or assaulting? And that's important to us. One, because it murders people twice, because there's the actual physical death, and then there's the murdering of their reputation and the murdering of sympathy for that person, because that person immediately becomes a suspect instead of a victim. So my question is, on what basis did the district attorney make the assertion that my brother attacked officers. So that's one, and that's still an open question. We still have an open question as to how many times he was tased. I've seen reports that say 3 to 4, but that's not something that needs to be guessed because the tasers can be downloaded, and that's factual information that they can get quite quickly. We've heard reports saying now that he was stopped for his own safety. So then I have a question about what are taser policies, because if you're stopping someone for their own safety, it seems to me that tasers aren't indicated. So tasers are supposed to, they're supposed to be used at the same, in the same way you might use a gun, sort of as a last resort. And so it's, I still have a question as to why, if the goal was to take care of my brother, why you would use electric shock. He was also pepper sprayed, and in the latest report we heard he was pepper sprayed so heavily that the officers all around had to go to the hospital for exposure. And so if they had to go, I'm imagining what it was like for my brother. So then my question also is, if you're dealing with someone in mental crisis, how was pepper spray indicated? And then we also have a question as to like when he died. So it's not clear to us, did he die at the scene? If he died in the hospital, why were we not called? Because the notion that he was by himself alive in the hospital without family is something that's quite painful to us. And then we just have general questions about what the policies are related to the use of tasers. In San Mateo County, apparently there have been 3 deaths by tasers just this year. And so the question is, are there policies in place? Were they following policy? If they were following policy, is it not an opportunity to rethink policy if it has ended up in 3 people dying in 1 year for an implement that's supposedly non-lethal?
You sound incredibly together. Do you have like a place to vent and dump?
Yes, I mean, not on this call.
No, I get that.
I mean, that's what my husband is for. That's what my friends are for. But not in the context of this call. I mean, I think, so a couple things. I think every person of color lives with this sort of threat hanging over their heads. And so, you know, your ability to be able to present one way in public and keep yourself pulled together. When I think about the extent to which my friends and family get pulled over by the police, get harassed by the police, and it's sort of the constant background to lives. I mean, when I was in college, I went to USC undergrad, and I still remember getting in a car and going to a club with my girlfriends and these sorority sisters. I mean, they're your classic nonviolent, and being pulled over by the LAPD, having them draw their guns, having them tell us lie spread eagle flat on the ground. That's not something that happens as a general, or my husband who, he was in grad school at Stanford, we would constantly get stopped by police, and there's a whole narrative to how you have to behave so that you don't get killed and so that you don't get arrested. People of color in America live like that all of the time. So you always have that level of tension. And so, I mean, if I think about being together, I mean, part of it is I spent a long time keeping myself together, even under the amounts of stress or tension that I think many of my white friends or colleagues don't know.
Did you worry about something like this happening with your brother?
I worry about it happening with every black man or boy I know. I mean, I live in London, and a big part of the reason why my husband and I moved is because we have an 8-year-old, and then we have twins, and boy and girl. And as soon as we had a son, I knew that I didn't have. I think it takes a huge amount of courage and optimism to raise a black child in the U.S., especially a black son. And I knew that I didn't have it. So in terms of how I felt, I in some ways there's a low level of dread that this could happen to anybody. And certainly I know that my brother was more vulnerable because he's both black and has mental illness.
Again, that was Abella Okobi. We wanted to try to get answers to some of her questions about her brother's death. The San Mateo County Sheriff's Office did not grant our interview requests, though they did acknowledge them. So we called the person who was responsible for investigating the police in that county.
We have been collecting all of the physical evidence, the tasers, et cetera. We have now interviewed all of the deputy sheriffs who were involved in this and the one sergeant who was involved.
San Mateo County District Attorney Stephen Wagstaff.
I go by Steve, but either way.
Wagstaff said he firewalls his investigators. They are not allowed to investigate any agency that they used to work for or are currently working with on another case. He said he's going to release all the video he has within 45 days. This, by the way, is a timeline that the family's attorney, John Burris, said he's happy with. The reason you don't release video sooner is because if witnesses don't know exactly what the investigator does and does not have on tape, it makes it harder to lie.
If I release the videos now and we still have some additional interviews to go and somebody sees it on television, that could affect the independence or the impartiality of their statement. I don't want that. So as soon as those interviews are done, my plan is to then release the videos to first, of course, to the families, members, the attorneys for the family members, and then to the general public.
Do the sheriff's deputies involved get to review the video before they give testimony?
No. My understanding is that they did not. They gave their statements without reviewing videos. But I have to check that. I'm not positive on that, but I believe that they did not.
The second question is, like, is your investigation reviewing the sheriff's taser and use of force policies?
It does include, I have looked at their policy on that. And we do review that. And that is a factor. Again, but it is only a factor in this sense, that my job as the district attorney is to not review it to determine whether this was a good thing or a bad thing within police tactics in the world. Mine is, was their conduct criminal? That's the singular purpose of a DA investigation. And what I'm determining is whether there was excessive force used here, which, of course, resulted in the death of this man, Mr. Okobi.
Right, but the question of whether or not the deputies involved were departing from written policy would have some bearing on whether their acts were
correct. It does have bearing. It is a factor on the scale.
So that policy is not anywhere the public can lay their hands on it. I understand the ACLU just put in a formal request. Is that something that you can release now?
Not now. That would be part of my report when I complete the investigation. Other than that, the release of the policy, the public record, it's with the sheriff's office.
But you have a copy.
Yeah, that's part of what we collect. We always collect the individual policy that they use.
So what's keeping you from releasing that policy now?
Because I don't want to release things piecemeal, other than the videos, because there's a purpose in releasing the videos in the public interest.
You've reviewed the videos personally?
I have reviewed, I think, two of the videos, not all of them. I will be reviewing them all when it's complete. It's just like I haven't read the individual reports, because I want to wait until my investigators put all of the reports together, and then I will read A to Z, everything that's in there. And so, but I've seen two of the videos.
I want to ask you a very kind of broad strokes question that came up in our interview with Okobi's sister. Immediately after her brother's death, the sheriff's office released a statement saying that Okobi had immediately assaulted one of their deputies. That was the quote, immediately
assaulted. I read that.
Assaulted.
I read that release.
In broad strokes, what do you think of that characterization?
It's a conclusion. And it is one that, for me, that, I mean, the sheriff's office will do what they do, but from what I have said in answering that very same question you're asking before is to say, I don't have that conclusion. My conclusion is I know that there was a physical interaction between these sites, Mr. Okobi and these deputies. The use of the word assault is a legal term. It's not one I would use at this point. I will wait till I've read everything, each statement, and what all the witnesses had to say, and view every video, and then I'll arrive at any conclusion at that. But at this point, that is a legal conclusion that I would not set forth.
Shortly after the incident, you were quoted, or actually you were in a soundbite on KQED, describing the incident as the deputies, quote, attempting to get control of him as he resisted. And during the course of that, a taser was discharged. Saying he resisted, isn't that a conclusion, a statement of conclusion
as
well?
No, that's a factual statement. That's not a legal conclusion. That's a factual statement. I didn't say there was anything wrong with the resistance.
Do you think that this particular incident would be getting the same amount of resources, the same level of investigation, if Chinedu Okobi's sister was not a Facebook executive?
Yes. And the reason I say that, and it's unfortunate that I can say that, that unfortunately Mr. Okobie's death is the third death in San Mateo County, little San Mateo County, since December, where there was a taser was involved. We had one in Daly City and another in Redwood City since December. One in December, one in August, and now this. Each one of those cases from my office got the same level of attention.
Did your office bring charges in any of those two prior tasers?
No, in both of those, we found that the conduct of the officers was lawful and not criminal.
When was the last time you brought criminal charges against a member of law enforcement?
We have right now. We are pending, I think we've got about four officers that we are prosecuting right now. Two of those would be for excessive force. And but in a death, we have not had one when it came to a death.
D.A. Wagstaff, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you for letting me speak with you, and I wish you a good weekend.
Steve Wagstaff is the San Mateo County District Attorney. He is investigating the death of Shinedu Valentin Okobie, who died after a San Mateo County Sheriff's deputy tased him multiple times. Again, we did ask the Sheriff's Office for an interview. They did not grant it.